You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello there and welcome to the Thursday, the 16th of June edition of the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. Barry Murphy, what you hear from the news team. A busy week of news here and lots in the paper. The silage scheme, organic payments, Brexit developments, the Talkish National Farm Survey and last week's National Biodiversity Conference all feature. We have a big team here today from news, so we'll crack on into it. First up, we'll head to our acting news editor, Amy Ford. Amy, you have news of money for farmers this week, and our front page might prick up the ears of a good few of our listeners. We have a new organic payment of up to 250 a hectare coming for the organic sector within the next cap, and then the Minister's silage scheme is also opening next week. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, plenty going on here, Barry. So on the organic side, the front page story in this week's journal, a new scheme to pay farmers up to €250 per hectare in the next cap. What's this all about? So the organic farming scheme is set to be revamped in the next cap. Obviously, the current one's been running in with the current cap that we're currently in. But from next year, we'll have a new cap, new range of schemes. And that includes, as I said, a revamped organic farming scheme. So what's the change? So there's going to be a massive increase in funding for the new scheme. And this is aimed at attracting over 4,000 new farmers into the organics system, basically, of farming. So the budget's going to be €256 million. That's a fivefold increase. And a proposed plan on these higher payment rates has been given to the European Commission, basically, for approval. So what's the new payment rate going to be? Well, the new payment rate is a significant increase from the current rate. So we're saying it's going to be jumping up to around €250 per hectare. The current rate is around €220 per hectare in the two-year conversion phase, and then €170 a hectare once you're in full organic status. And again, there's higher front-loaded payments there that are applicable to farmers in the horticulture and tillage sectors. So why is there more money going into organics? Well, the EU and the government basically want the country to increase the amount of land that's under organics to help with carbon emissions targets, biodiversity, and the environment. So the current level is around 2% of the total land area farmed in Ireland is under organics, and this is going to be jumping up to 7.5% over the lifetime of the next cap. That's the next target, essentially. On the other side of things then, the fodder scheme that you mentioned there, Barry, there's going to be the €100 per hectare silage scheme. It was much talked about over the last number of weeks. We've heard farmers over the last number of months basically saying that input costs are on the rise. We've heard of fertiliser increases, feed price increases. And the big one, I suppose, that's even affecting everyone, no matter whether you're in farming or not, is obviously fuel prices increase and even. So this new fodder support scheme, it's going to pay farmers up to €1,000 for making silage or hay this summer. It's going to open for applications next week. There's a total budget of €56 million. And the budget there is basically for making up to 10 hectares of fodder before the 5th of September. So that's the key date. You have to make this hay or silage this summer before the 5th of September. And applications are going to open for the scheme. They're currently going to open next week, sorry. And they're going to close on the 2nd of August. And if you're wondering of taking part and when you're going to be paid for the scheme, November is the deadline that the Department of Agriculture has set for themselves, or the target, with all payments hopefully going out by the end of the year. And Barry, you actually have this story this week. And the Department of Agriculture has told you that there'll be on-the-spot inspections. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
No, absolutely, Amy. Definitely a lot of farmers interested to see can they get that money. And I suppose how exactly can they apply? You know, I suppose they'd be interested in seeing how they can be compensated for making more expensive haylage and silage this year. How can they apply? Is it through their advisor, or what's the story there?
Yeah, so farmers will be able to apply online either themselves or through their advisor. And as long as they apply by the 2nd of August 2022, they'll be in the scheme. And, you know, the key thing is there that it has to be made up to 10 hectares. You'll get paid, and it has to be done by the 5th of September. I suppose there is a question if there is an oversubscription of applicants, if there's a big push on over the coming weeks and months across the country and farmers want to get into the scheme to make more silage and hay, whether being good, all that is, they will change the payment rates, in that they could either front load the payments on the first number of hectares and have a shorter or a decreased payment of less than €100 per hectare on more acres, or they could reduce the payment rate essentially. But that is only if there is an oversubscription to the scheme essentially.
Thanks, Amy. Plenty of detail there. And just while I have you, I know you report there on page 8 as well about Banagher meat plant after getting plan information, or the green light for construction in County Offaly. There was a few, I suppose, issues raised about the initial plans from a number of stakeholders, but it's got the green light anyway. And when is it going to get built?
Yeah, Barry, I suppose this is one another a planning issue, I suppose, has held up something in the agriculture sector. We've seen it over the last number of years and months, especially the Glanbia cheese plant, which has actually got the green light and things are actually starting to move there. But appeals with the planning authorities on Bord Pleanála have stood in the way of this meat plant in Offaly. It's in Banagher. It's in the region of €40 million meat plant. That's what's going to be built. Permission has been granted for the facility. And there's actually an old abattoir on the site, which used to be there, and they're going to extend onto that. Now, as the planning authority said, the building is advertised as an extension to the existing abattoir, but in its decision to grant planning on Bord Pleanála said that the scale of the proposed development is probably much larger than what was envisaged by an extension. I'm hearing questions, I suppose, what are farmers going to say? What's the output of this new facility going to be? What does it mean for Offaly? Output is expected to be in the region of 40 tonnes per day, and the factory is expected to process around 140 cattle per day. The planning board said that this is significantly in excess of the around 100 cattle per week that the previous abattoir on site, and I think that decommissioned or was ended, it was in the mid to 2010s, if that makes sense. So around 2013, 2014, it closed basically. It's going to be less than that. It's going to be more than that. Apologies. So there's going to be around 140 cattle a week going through the gates there. Interesting as well, planners said that the details of the application were referred to Antashka, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Department of Heritage and the Heritage Council. And they said that no response to the referrals about the plant were received by the board with the time period specified. The ICSA and local TD and former Minister for Agriculture, Barry Cowan, they've all really welcomed the plant, saying that it'll improve competition in the beef sector and that it'll be positive for the local economy there in Banagher and wider Offaly.
Thanks, Amy. Plenty of detail there. We'll head next, folks, to our news correspondent Declan O'Brien and the National Farm Survey from Togish, which was launched on Tuesday of this week. It shows analysis of farm incomes in 2021. And Dec, you have a bit more information for us there now.
Yeah, well, this National Farm Survey, Dylan, is... there's no real surprises in it. It just confirms that the big winners at the moment are dairy farmers. It shows that their incomes are tipping on either side of 100,000 on average for 2021. The average income was €97,350. That was up about 23%. But if we look at the farmers, the dairy farmers that actually have debt, which are probably the more progressive and push ahead dairy farmers, their average income is 107,000. The other standout performance, I suppose, that was highlighted by the survey was tillage farmers. Their incomes rose 77%, rising from around 33,000 to 59,000 between 20 and 21, you know, and that was on the back of extremely strong grain prices last harvest and continuing to get stronger through the winter. On the dry stock side of things, the news wasn't as good. Suckler farmer incomes have risen by 30%, but that's just to a base of just under 11,000 a year. You know, beef finishers, well, steady as it goes, I suppose, because of more expensive stores last year. Their average income was up 6%, but still at only 16,416, to be exact. Sheep farmer incomes rose by 14% to over 20,000. I suppose we see the problems that the survey highlighted, the dependence on the dry stock sector. In the dry stock sector on direct payments. You know, suckler farmers are dipping into their direct payments to subsidise their enterprises. Direct payments account for 138% of their income. The figure is 93% for beef finishers and 91% for sheep producers. In contrast, the dairy sector, direct payments only account for 22% of income, and it accounts for 47% of income on tillage farms, which in a way is worrying because obviously with greater levelling of payments, both the tillage sector and the dry stock sector, you'd say, will come under a lot of pressure as convergence gathers pace.
Thanks, Leigh. Plenty of information there. And we'll head to Rachel Donovan, our news correspondent. Rachel, you were also looking at this farm survey, and I think you were at the launch of it on Tuesday there in Buswells in the city centre. You had some interesting information from them on the labour impact or the labour cost impact. You know, we saw Dec mention there that the dairy incomes really rose last year, but you have a bit more on how the labour might impact that.
Yeah, Barry. So I suppose while dairy incomes looked, as Dec said, they were quite positive and they touched nearly €100,000. The unpaid labour that goes into running these operations, well, that's not taken into account within that figure. So the average dairy farmer is 54, and I suppose while we don't have the exact hours worked per week, we all know it's more than your average working week. But I spoke to Emma Dillon, she's an economist with Teagasc, and I just asked, should the hours farmers have worked be costed into it, I suppose? And she said that when you calculate that the unpaid hours and also suppose the hired labour component, the family farm income is adjusted, and I suppose that figure is closer to about 72,000 on average, as opposed to what the survey is saying, up near 100,000. So I also spoke to Frank O'Mara, who gave me his thoughts on the outcome of the survey results. And I suppose although pig farmers are not included in the survey, he talked about the issues facing them at the moment also.
So I'm here with Frank O'Mara, Director of Teagasc. I suppose, Frank, what was the most significant results you saw from the survey for 2021?
Well, look, overall, 2021 was a reasonably good year for farm incomes, and for most of the sectors, we saw good increases in income. In particular, for the dairy and tillage sectors, they were very strong. We saw average tillage incomes increase to almost 60,000, which is a very good rebound from the previous year. And that was on the foot of good weather, leading to very good yields of crops and also good prices for grain in 2021. On the dairy sector, again, we had a very good year for grass growth last year and good milk output on our dairy farms. And average dairy farm income is actually quite close to 100,000 in 2021. So, you know, a very strong performance for that sector. The sheep sector also had a good year with incomes breaking through the 20,000 level. And on beef farms, while incomes were up, in percentage terms, it's off of a very low base, and incomes on our beef farms are still, I suppose, you know, quite modest, and we'd certainly like to see those improving further in years ahead.
And I suppose with regards to the pig sector, I know they're not included in the survey, but...
That's right. Look, the pig sector is obviously having a very difficult time at the moment, and that was emerging in 2021. We saw the increase in feed prices towards the latter end of the year and falls in the prices for pig meat, and that squeeze meant that most pig farmers moved into loss-making territory in 2021 as the year went on. And look, I suppose, you know, we've seen the continuation of those trends of increasing input prices into 2022, and that's affecting all sectors. You know, we're all very aware of the big increases in prices of fertiliser and fuel and feed that we've seen in 2022. And I suppose that is being counterbalanced in most sectors by increase in prices of outputs in milk and expected prices for grain at harvest and in beef and sheep meat. And I suppose 2022 will be a story of those two differing trends, rise in input prices but also rise in output prices, and it remains to be seen how that will play out overall for farm incomes for 2022. But for the pig sector, you know, they are still very much in the eye of the storm in terms of, you know, the price of pig meat not being sufficient to cover their cost of production, and costs of production have risen quite a bit this year already, and you know, the possibility is there that pig feed prices will go up even further as the year goes on.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Rachel. Folks, next up we'll head to Phelan O'Neill, our market intelligence and EU specialist. Phelan, welcome to the news podcast. We haven't had you on now in a while. You've been covering the moves with the Northern Ireland Protocol this week. I suppose there's been lots of statements and counter statements from both sides of the Irish Sea in terms of the British government and the Irish government. Where does it all leave farmers now at the end of this week? And particularly, I suppose, those from the dairy sector. We heard from Dairy Industry Ireland there this week that there's a fear of about 800 million litres of milk being left with nowhere to go due to, I suppose, Northern Ireland producers not being able to bring their milk across the border for processing. You've more for us anyway.
Yes, Barry, we've looked at this in some detail on pages 22 and 23 of the journal this week. And basically, you've flagged up there just the issue with the milk out of Northern Ireland. A third of all Northern Ireland milk is processed south of the border. And that comes up to 800 million litres. It's a problem. if that doesn't have a home to go to. The only other option, there isn't the processing capacity in the north. The only other option for that is to ship it to Britain. And even that's a logistical nightmare because this simply the tankers aren't there to do that. It's also a problem, of course, for dairy processors and creameries in the border counties in the Republic of Ireland as well. You ask, how have we got to this mess? It's just a week short of 6 years. The referendum was on the 23rd of June 2016. And since then, we have been through one Brexit crisis after the other. People's eyes tend to glaze over when you mention the subject. It's the best conversation stopper sometimes you come on. But we do have a situation now where essentially the UK and the EU are in parallel tracks, and the reality of life, the with those tracks diverging, the reality is that Irish farmers get caught in the middle. We've talked about the immediate problem now with the legislation that's proposed by the UK, and this legislation, Barry, is essentially to allow the UK overwrite the protocol that was agreed with the EU as part of the withdrawal agreement back in 2020 that led to the Trade and Cooperation Agreement, which is basically the Brexit deal as such. And if we cast our minds back a few years, you know, we used to have this regular ongoing debate, what if there's a no-deal Brexit? And I suppose the fear for Irish farmers at the minute is that this is the start of a journey that could end with us going back to that point where the Trade and Cooperation Agreement that was agreed between the UK and the EU to prevent a no-deal Brexit, that deal could collapse in the worst-case scenario. And this is where the nightmare really kicks in for Irish agriculture, because that deal, by its existence, and has plenty of administrative problems, we can't deny that, but that means that Irish farmers don't have to pay around €1 billion tariff for exports to Britain that they would otherwise have to pay. And it's mainly the beef sector. They would be, if that deal wasn't in place, Irish beef exports to Britain would be carrying tariffs of around 720, 725 million. And the remainder, the bulk of the remainder then would be carried between the cheese and butter exports to Britain. So that's what's at stake here. What the UK has done, they've unilaterally went out to change this to essentially disregard the protocol. And the next move now is in the hands of the European Union. They have announced that they are taking legal action. But if there's a positive, if there's a hope in this, all of this process takes time. It's a year, really, essentially, for the legislation to pass through the UK Parliament and the legal action. I think the expert people that are more knowledgeable in this than me would suggest that that'll probably take a year to run as well. That year creates an opportunity for more negotiation, more discussion, just as we've been having every week, every month, seemingly, of the past 6 years. And the hope would be that there will be some sort of a consensus, because the sad reality is, of course, all of this could be avoided if the UK had accepted being part of the EU veterinary zone, as is suggested by our Northern editor, David Wright, in the Northern edition of the paper this week. You know, that would have been the logical outcome. We haven't got there yet. That could still be perhaps arrived at. And there's also practical solutions. I think the controls that were envisaged by the EU at the outset of this, I think it's widely recognised that they're simply impractical for trading within a country or within a jurisdiction, with Northern Ireland being part of the UK. So look, it's basically, in terms of Brexit, the uncertainty has returned at maximum volume. And Irish farmers now will be hoping that we never get to this scenario where we're looking at the cost of €1 billion a tariff, or the fact that milk cannot come from the north across the border, or indeed lambs come south as well for processing. Because, again, that creates a problem for farmers in the north. It creates a problem for processing in the south that has their business developed on the basis of that supply. So that's where we leave it, Barry. We've went into it in some detail this week with the different scenarios. We're covering it extensively online as well. But, you know, whilst, say, it is a conversation stopper in a lot of company, the whole issue of Brexit, and people roll their eyes, the reality is that if the worst Brexit ever was to happen, it'll be Irish farmers that will be left picking up the tab for it.
Thanks, Phelan. Very comprehensive there. And look, as Phelan mentioned, folks, there's more on page 22 and 23, what you could describe as absolutely essential reading for anyone interested in the Northern Ireland Protocol and the impact it'll have on the farming community. Next up, folks, we'll move to Noel Barton, our news correspondent. Noel, you were at the National Biodiversity Conference last week, and your report there on page 20 from comments made from the Taoiseach and Minister Pippa Hackett. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, Barry. So it was the second of these conferences, and it was held in Dublin Castle last week. So we on Taoiseach would have opened the different sessions that were happening on the second day of the conference, which was Thursday. And so I suppose the Taoiseach's remarks, he welcomed results-based payment schemes in the CAP strategic plan, and he did recognise the role that was already being played by farmers. He also recognised that there was a complexity in addressing the biodiversity problems that are faced by the country, given the really local level on which biodiversity action has to take place, and really the field-by-field approach on which biodiversity can be improved or disimproved. And he kind of contrasted it with the national efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which it's really about the overall sectoral and industry approaches to the issue. It's really about overall figures. And Minister of State in the Department of Agriculture, Senator Pippa Hackett, also addressed the conference. And Minister Hackett, of course, has responsibility for biodiversity within the department. And a couple of the points made by Minister Hackett at the conference would have been that biodiversity and improvements to biodiversity need to be made by all farmers, not just necessarily those that might be a little bit lower stocked or by farmers that are a bit more extensive. She said that all farmers from the most intensive to the least intensive need to be taken along on any of the state's efforts to improve biodiversity. And another area which she addressed in her remarks was forestry. And she did acknowledge that there had been some historical failures of the state's forestry programs, and that nature and biodiversity did suffer as a result of some of these misguided policies. The conference itself, there was a lot of areas that touched off agriculture, of farming, of land use. But there wasn't necessarily many farmers on the panels or indeed in attendance. It was something that was picked up on by the couple of farmers that were there. And I suppose another point that would relate to agriculture and that would be of interest to our readers is that the Citizens' Assembly on Biodiversity is really just getting up and going at the minute. And this assembly will seek to produce a series of recommendations that would guide government policy on nature enhancement and the protection of biodiversity. And there are four farmers on this assembly out of the 99 members. And the assembly itself has said it will engage with stakeholders, and it is open to hearing all views on biodiversity and nature restoration. So I suppose that's an area where we might see a bit of movement from the farm organisations to get farmers' points across in the whole biodiversity debate.
Thanks, Noel. Plenty of detail, and absolutely, I'd agree with you there. Farmers 100% have a role in preserving biodiversity. And I did see some of those comments online, right, about them not being included, but it was good to see your coverage of it anyway. And sticking with that National Biodiversity Conference, folks, our Irish Country Living colleague, Janine Kennedy, was also at the conference, and she spoke to Minister Pippa Hackett's Green Party colleague, Minister of State Malcolm Noonan. He's responsibility for heritage within the Department of Housing, and he's also overseeing the National Parks and Wildlife Service. We hear from them now.
At last week's National Biodiversity Conference at Dublin Castle, I sat down with the Green Party's Minister of State for Heritage and Electoral Reform, Malcolm Noonan, to discuss where he sees the future of Irish agriculture, the efforts being made to work with farmers to protect biodiversity, and the lack of conventional farming voices present at this year's conference.
It's been really interesting to hear the deliberations on the Shared Island initiatives around the communication of biodiversity, which was one of the closing sessions yesterday, which was hugely entertaining and interesting, but also the wider discussions on the bigger picture stuff that we have to address, which is the Nature Restoration Law, the EU Biodiversity Strategy, where we've come from in terms of resources, and my own action plan for the National Parks and Wildlife Service. All in all, I think what I'm hearing from delegates is, the context is a lot more positive than it was in 2019 because of the additional resources, and certainly feeling that there's a lot more action on the ground.
One thing that I noticed of the conference is that there was kind of a lack of conventional farming voices.
Mm.
And I wonder, is there an outreach problem there? Should we be doing more?
Yeah, we should always be doing more. And, I wonder myself, do the farming community tend to go to farming conferences and biodiversity people go to biodiversity conferences.
I'm a chef, I would go to the food conferences and I never see farmers there either.
Yeah, and I really think that, you know, we perhaps could reach out more. You know, we did have a section, a really good session on farming yesterday, mm-hmm. which I attended, was excellent, in fact. But, you know, it would be fantastic to have farm organisations represented here. Really important because, you know, their work is going to be deeply impacted and can benefit hugely from the biodiversity agenda.
That something you think you will be looking at for the next conference, maybe being more inclusive or sending out invitations?
Yeah, definitely. I think the invites are open. I think people, perhaps a more concerted reach out from our side might be useful. I met with the farm organisations a number of weeks ago in the Custom House just about the nature restoration law and about designations in general, and we had a very good, productive meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm throughout my tenure here, I'm very clear that I want to maintain constructive dialogue with the farming sector. More than that, I want to ensure that this is a collaborative approach. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
For the intensive dairy farmer down in my part of the country, in Kilkenny, to the marginal farmers up in Mayo who are benefiting from our farm plan schemes, and there's a potential there for a meeting of minds on a lot of issues. But there's no doubt about it, the farmers want to do the right thing.
I think there's a real and genuine fear among farmers in the farming community with this increased awareness of climate, knowing more than ever what we need to do going forward, but also knowing that the science behind it, you know, for example, the most efficient farm would be one where the cows are in a shed and they never see the light of day. Like, I think some farmers have this real and genuine fear that our small farms and our agricultural heritage on that side of things will be lost in favor of ultra efficient super farms.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I think you think of Schumacher's book, Small is Beautiful. I think we need to localize everything. We need to have local abattoirs. We need to have produce really good quality food, which we do in Ireland very well. And consume it in so far as possible close to local communities. You know, I give the example of a local butcher in Kilkenny who has his own farm and breeds his own stock. And when there was a meat crisis there, the supermarkets there back during COVID, he still had plenty on his shelves because it was his own. They were his own animals.
Mm.
And to me, that epitomises where we need to be going with food production. We need to localise everything,
mm-hmm.
and be as self-sufficient insofar as we can with everything. And you know, I know that doesn't, you know, that's not going to resonate with large dairy or large beef farms. We do absolutely need to produce for the market as well. But I think there's an opportunity there that Ireland produces something very unique, a very clean product. It's not always green because, it, you know, there's some of our green credentials there in terms of water quality and climate do need mm-hmm. to be, they have to, absolutely need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But I don't think there should be anything to fear from embracing the climate or biodiversity agenda.
Now, I did find a few farming voices present at the conference, and I asked them what brought them to Dublin Castle and where their interest in biodiversity lies.
I'm Aoife Cassidy, and I farm in Clare, in Kilmaley, County Clare. And I specialise in conservation grazing with Kerry cattle. It's my ancestral home place. And the land wasn't farmed for several decades. And so the pasture was overgrown, essentially was rewilded, but not biodiverse. So it was essentially dominated by scotch grass. So I wanted to know, what could I do? How could I bring the land back into production? What were my options financially? So I looked into everything. I looked into getting contractors in to mow the grass, and no one would touch it, obviously, because they didn't know what was underneath all that scotch grass. And I could have damaged someone's machinery. So I did look into forestry, and unfortunately, the only option I was given was to plant the entire thing with Sitka spruce. So I am an ecologist, so that really didn't sit well with me because I knew it was a monoculture. I knew I was going to end up with a very dark, essentially a dark landscape for my neighbours, and I didn't want that. So I looked into what animal could graze my fields and would survive. And thankfully I found the Kerry cow. They're really light on the land. They're great for Drumlin country, which is where I farm. They are really easy to care for. So I was a novice farmer and I needed to be able to do this myself and learn really quickly. So thankfully they calve really nicely and easily on their own outside. And I could also outwinter them. So that was a fantastic plus for me, because it meant I didn't have to build sheds and I didn't have to deal with slurry. So what I can do is I can manure my land naturally by outwintering my cows. So they are manuring it and I don't use any artificial fertilizers as a consequence.
How long have you been farming now?
I'm farming with my husband for the past, I think it's 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael Keegan is my name, and I'm farming in Wicklow in Enniskerry near Powerscourt Waterfall. And I'm also working on Lugala Estate in County Wicklow.
And what brings you to the National Biodiversity Conference today?
Just here, I suppose, it's a place. It's very topical at the moment, all this kind of biodiversity and environmental stuff. And the place where I work, Lugala Estate, is at the very, very beginning of an environmental restoration project. So I think as part of that, it's good to be kind of at these events and meeting the people that are going to be driving change. And, you know, I suppose it's networking really more than anything else.
Thanks, Janine. That's all we have time for this week's folks. A special shout out there to our colleagues too on the Down to Agribusiness podcast, where this week, Jack Kennedy, Anne Finnegan and Phelim O'Neill discuss how the finalisation of sectoral climate reduction targets could lead to a reduction in Irish cattle numbers. They compare this to Brazil's preparations to slaughter 8 million additional cattle per year by the end of the decade. And just, I suppose, look at the differences between the two systems and how if we're reducing cattle numbers in Ireland, it's only going to be replaced elsewhere. That's all we have time for. Have a good week. And remember, you can get more on the stories discussed here on the podcast in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. Thanks for listening and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.